So yeah, we can get started. I don't know how do we start. Since we don't have a chair.
Yeah, so we'll start. And then Chris will hopefully not make us all.
Sorry, not to interrupt. Do you want me to tell you when to shut up?
Yeah.
All right.
So,
We don't have a mark.
There's only five people.
Where's your gavel?
All right, so we have we're going to get started on our SWAC meeting tonight in a slightly different fashion than normal. We have a unique scenario that is. We just have a unique scenario in regards to our SWAC meeting. So I'm going to turn it over to Kim to kind of get started. We can address that unique scenario and then roll on as normal. So I will turn it over to Kim to get us started.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I'm Kim Harless, for those that don't know, Environmental Operations Specialist for Clark County Public Health. We should go around the room first. Before we get started. So, do you want to introduce yourself?
I'm Jana Williams, and I'm the Office Assistant for the Solid Waste Environmental Outreach here at Clark County.
I'm Travis Dutton. I'm the Solid Waste Program Manager here in Clark County.
I'm Steve Willis, formerly representing Northern Clark County, currently applying to continue to represent.
I am Chris Prothero. I represent Southwest Clark County.
I'm Allie Toker, I represent
the county at large.
I'm Simone
O'Jay,
and I represent, I'm in the same boat, and formerly represented cities and small towns, and
then
reapplying.
And I'm Rich
McConaughey,
I'm the city of Vancouver representative.
Lauren Neff, I represent the agricultural producers.
Thank you. I hadn't moved with the process. So formally we were able to, those that were interested after their term expired to just, we would suggest to the board, this person is expressing interest to continue on, can you, we suggest you reappoint them. And the Board of County Commissioners recently decided that they wanted to instead open up those positions to allow anybody to apply for them whenever a term expires, regardless if the former member is interested in continuing on. So, unfortunately, I did not get that notification until after we had kind of started the process with Stephen and Simone. So, right now, Stephen and Simone aren't official members. I asked them to go ahead and continue to sit here because their opinions are really valued. So those positions are out right now for recruitment. So our only official members right now are the ones that are on your agenda. And so we do have a quorum, which is great. Those are the process. The deadline just passed for, we also were recruiting for a business representative and the solid waste industry representative. So those have passed and we did get applications for those. And we have come up with our recommendation to the board, and we'll be sending that shortly to the board. And they'll usually they take our recommendation and move forward with it. And so those individuals will be present at our next meeting. Alan Jessa isn't here today. He's down in Arizona being a snowbird. And since Stephen was formerly our vice chair and would fill in when Alan wasn't here, we currently need to. Of the members that are here, need to appoint a chair pro tem. So, if anyone so wants to volunteer, and then the members can vote that person in to lead the rest of the meeting.
I'll nominate Chris to be the chair.
Absolutely. I second that.
Vote.
Good.
Yeah. Okay. Great. So, Do you feel comfortable leading the rest? We'll do roll call and approval of the minutes.
Yes, please.
Or did you first? Did you guys have any questions about that recruitment and the board's the changes, anything like that? Okay.
All right. Can we get a roll call, please?
So we are just missing Rem Wilson and Alan, but we do have a quorum with the members present.
Next item is approval of minutes. Has everybody had a chance to go over the minutes from the last meeting? Any changes to be made or entertain any motion to approve the meetings as presented? I'll move to approve. Second.
I'll second that.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Minutes have been approved. Apparently, I've been voluntold to be the appointment of the chair pro tem, so we'll go to item number three for updates, the Clark County Public Health Solid Waste Program.
All right, so I'll start I'll give you the usual updates for the green programs, but I'll start with some bigger projects that we have going on and some bigger events and things that have kind of shaped the way that we're doing things right now and we'll be planning to handle a little bit more in the future. So we are currently, some of the bigger projects are things that are coming up that will involve SWAC and that we will bring to SWAC. Our number one being the regional system study. We may have touched on this at the last meeting, but we are currently in the middle of, with our project team, which consists of Clark County and City of Vancouver staff, working on the scope of work and planning to complete a study of our system as it stands right now, the solid waste system, what exists, how well it's handling all of the wastes and all of the various different types of materials that are being discarded and disposed of, and where we need to be in 20 years in order to handle waste and recycling and other types of materials in Clark County. And then this study is to kind of help us plan for where do we need to go, what do we need to do from a logistical standpoint, from an economic standpoint, and a service standpoint to make sure that we are where we need to be in 20 years. So the study essentially will provide recommendations on how we can prepare to fund what the system will look like to meet our community solid waste needs for 20 years, but also will provide direction on capital improvements and improvements on different parts of the system in order to help us prepare. So that'll be, I think we're looking at probably most of 2019 for that study before we get some, or I'm sorry, most of 2018, possibly into 2019, before we get recommendations on how to move forward as far as making sure that we are where we need to be for the next 20 years of handling solid waste in the county. I don't have the charter with me. Mike, was there anything else that you wanted me to talk about as far as that study? Or
not really, other than it's kind of a precursor to updating our solid waste management plan. So what we'll be doing is we'll be evaluating the recommendations of the current plan and looking at what it will take to implement those, what those impacts will be.
And as we develop some of our planning documents, I don't know if it's typical or usual to share planning documents or kind of at least project proposals or project plans with the SWAC just to make sure you have a complete understanding of right now we've developed what is in scope and defined what is in the scope, but also what we are not considering as part of this project too, and what we will be looking at again in subsequent projects like the solid waste management plan update, but then also how do we develop a robust outreach and communication program with our residents to help them prepare for what we are going to need to be doing to address solid waste issues in the county moving forward. So I can work with Kim or the chair to figure out the best way to share those materials to make sure that you have kind of a complete picture of what we're doing. Any questions on that? Some other things that are coming up. Kim is currently leading the way on updating our recycling contract. Our contract expires at the end of 2019.
Yes.
And in order to be prepared for what a new contract will look like, going through and currently evaluating what's in our current contract and developing a list of potential modifications or updates to that contract that we need to make. The next steps will be taking it to our public health leadership teams to get some political guidance on what will be and what will not be supported politically in the county is what we should and should not be looking at in this recycling contract. So right now it's a long run up. You know, we've got a long time till the contract we have a while before the contract expires, but there's going to be a lot of work and presenting and kind of identifying alternatives to any issues that we're facing right now. But that project will, and then there's also in the event, there's also some contractual overlap that needs to happen as far as in the event of any type of transfer of contracted vendor, there's some transitional, you know, review and transfer of materials and transfer of data and information that needs to happen. So in the event that that does happen, there's a 6-month window that we have to be prepared for that to start before the new contract begins. So so Kim will be taking the lead on that, and we will probably be bringing a lot of the elements in our, let's call it our wish list or our what we're looking at modifying to SWAC in order to get feedback and then also be able to bring adequate support to our elected officials when we talk about what we want to address and what we're really looking at targeting for materials and how we handle things. So.
Additionally, the City of Vancouver's contract might be going through a similar process around the same time, depending on if they extend or whatnot. And then I believe it's the City of Ridgefield is also on a very similar timeline as ours. Oh, is it Camas?
It was Camas, yeah.
Camas. And so we're going to like work together with all of our communities to make sure, you know, we're not doing drastic differences so things aren't confusing for residents if they just move to a different city in the county. So our collection, our recycling collection contract only covers the unincorporated areas. So we want to make sure that things are pretty similar. But also look at opportunities to include.
As far as another program-wide item that's come up, it had been a long time coming, but as of, was it this week, enforcement began on asbestos being dropped off at the... We have to stand up and... I know. It's like, yeah. Flashbacks there.
Have you shared that with them?
No, we don't need to. So, sorry, that totally threw me off. I'm going to turn this over to Derek in a second. But essentially, there have been regulations coming that prevented or around the disposal of asbestos. And there has been an asbestos project team kind of working on preparing for that. Metro began enforcing their rules already, and we saw an impact as far as what we saw coming from Oregon into our system. So enforcement is now happening at our transfer stations, which hasn't yielded a large impact on us at the county staff level anyways, but I wanted to kind of, from anecdotal perspective, the impact of now people have to show up at the transfer station if they're doing construction projects or if they have material that is suspect of potentially having asbestos, they have to have had it tested and have proper documentation saying that it meets certain asbestos thresholds in order to be able to dispose of it at the transfer station. And you've had some interesting situations that have come up because of that, it sounds like. But I don't know if you want to talk a little bit more about what the impact of this is.
Yeah, it's been entertaining. So we rolled it out on February 1st. And as Travis mentioned, it's basically just standards that greatly mimic what Portland and other transfer station systems, you know, down the I-5 corridor. We've learned that Eastern Washington is a little bit different because we have customers who are now driving their material to Spokane. Just really being consistent with everything in this area is handled. Tanya really spearheaded a group combined of the city staff, county staff, public health,
Southwest
Clean Air Agency, and but collectively we've been working on for about a year to hit this rollout date of February 1st. February 1st is just arbitrary. This is a quiet time of year traditionally in the solid waste industry, so we felt like it was a good time to roll it out to get this going. And we did a press release, some social media, and had some handouts to the transfer stations as well. And a lot of the larger customers and larger roofers and construction companies got the message, which was great. But clearly what we're finding is kind of that smaller, either home remodeler or small contractors are the ones that we've found is really struggling with the process change. And they either didn't get the three handouts we gave them, the three different times they've been to the transfer station last month, and didn't read it. We don't know exactly. We know a lot of them are regular customers. We know they were educated. They just chose not to comply or didn't believe it. And one other thing Travis mentioned, we are finding that because of the restrictions we're putting in place, we're getting better origination of the waste from the customers. So I think at Central Transfer, we turned away, in 5 days, we turned away about 250 customers so far. Of those customers, a normal day at Central Transfer is about 700 customers, 500 to 700 customers. So it's a big number, but it's relatively small. Of that, I would say probably more than half are customers that are from Oregon and should not have been bringing the waste to us to start with. And we just never had a particularly great way to enforce that other than to ask them, you know, where is this material coming from? And everybody, of course, says down the street or gives us a false address. So there's really no way to enforce that. We aren't the police. But a lot of the material was turned away because it was Oregon material and should have been staying down that area. The other half, we've had a lot of challenges just with people providing proper documentation. They seem to really be getting in the flow of it. We've the last couple of days, we've seen a lot more information come in. Forms being filled out properly, everybody kind of prepared. So it seems like we're kind of turning the tide on it. And I think that doing it in February is going to be a good thing. We're still going to see another push, June, July, when the construction season really heats up. The biggest challenge has been the roofing companies out there. A lot of them have expressed dissatisfaction with the process. But a lot of them have also said, that's what Portland does, what everybody else does, we'll just do the same thing we do in Portland. Great, no problem. We appreciate you guys doing this because now everybody can be on the same playing field. And all we're really asking them to do is take a sample of the job, take it to a lab, have it tested. If it tests positive for asbestos, then we have solid waste permits and we can handle that as such and take it to a landfill. If it tests negative, then you can bring it in as garbage or C&D or whatever the material is going to be. So it's really a fairly simple process, just a change. It's really hard.
And it's based on a list of suspect materials that were identified by Southwest Clean Air Agency. Correct. Is that correct? Okay. So in case this information hadn't come to you before, I don't know if we have them here or not, but I did print off a copy of the press release that went out December 5th, and then I've got some of the example outreach materials that kind of explain it a little bit more that we can leave copies with you if you would like.
And we'll be doing a bill insert in February and March to all the commercial and residential homes. Just to kind of basically kind of mimic that. We haven't finished the final copy of it yet, but just to get the information out, because we know a lot of the homeowners are going to be doing their own demo work, and so we want to reach them in advance so they're aware of the process being followed. It's not that angry customer. We've had our scale house has been through a lot the last 5 days. A lot of yelling, a lot of screaming, a couple of spitting customers, racing off customers. It's been not the best side of humanity necessarily.
We're working on a bloopers reel.
Reel.
So is that, do you guys have any questions about any of the impact of that or any details about that at all?
What happens if it is asbestos? Does it come up as asbestos?
So small quantities of asbestos, we are equipped to handle the transfer station. So we have kind of asbestos protocols, triple bag, wetted, and we have an asbestos container on site. Any kind of large generators and material, they would be referred to get a special waste permit, and then they would be taken directly to the landfill to be handled properly.
It just costs a little premium.
To go to the landfill? Landfills typically charge less than a transfer station for material, just because you're at the source, but then you got to drive it there. So all in, it's probably fairly comparable price-wise.
I'm just out of curiosity, not to put you on the spot, this isn't fair, but has anybody that you turned away come back with the proper paperwork?
Yes. Or,
okay. So that was what you mentioned you hope seeing. But
The first couple of days, it's hard for us to tell who's coming back and when they're coming back. We're not tracking the papers necessarily yet. We're trying to come up with a better logging system. But, the tonnage was down the first day, so we knew, that it was coming, but it's a return now, and so we're assuming that some of these folks went and got it tested and now returned with their trailers. Really, it's a small, kind of the prototypical person we're finding is the contractor that's
Got a couple of jobs he's doing. He bundles his material in and hits the transfer station on the way home or in the morning. We've got a lot of guys from that work in Oregon, take their trailer down to Oregon, fill it up, bring it home, and then in the morning they'll go to Central on their way back down to Portland to dump on their way down when there's no line. And that's when we'll say, well, what's the material? Where is it from? Oh, it's from a couple jobs I'm working in Portland. Okay, we need to go to Metro on your way back down and dump it. So, we think they're coming back through.
So the commercial guys, we figured they're doing this for a living. They should be on top of this. Is this process going to be a little bit more onerous to the everyday Joe that's working on their place?
There is an exemption available if you have four or fewer dwellings. Is that right?
Dwellings? Is that the
distinction? Yeah, I think it's four or fewer dwellings. You don't have to get a survey. So you don't have to go through the full-blown large expense survey, but you just need to get a sample. The sample's not quite as expensive. I don't know the exact rates. It depends on the size of the project. So they will still have to go get a sample of the material. If you're ripping up a vinyl floor at home, you're going to need to go get a sample. And then when they get to the transfer station, we have a short form that we're asking them to fill out, but they can also go to the website and pull it beforehand. And if it's sampled, it's just kind of a check mark of, yes, I had a sample, here's the survey, here's the paperwork, and here's the address of the job site. And that's the information we're looking for. The transfer station is getting incredibly jammed up with traffic. We're not trying to add any more time than we have to.
Right. I definitely see that. I guess my thought is, remodeling a home, they have no clue, for the most part, about, rules, regulations, and what's age. They don't know what they don't know. Do they have help, a source where they can say, I don't know what I'm doing, walk me through it?
Okay, first call should be to SWACA, the Southwest Clean Air Agency, and that's on all the material, and they can help them kind of understand what type of material do you have. Well, that's probably going to be okay, you're all right, don't worry about it. If it's something different, then they'll walk me through how to test it or just how to remove it or have it painted and handle it from there. So we try to drive most of the calls. We answer as much as we can. SWACA wants us to answer as many questions as we can, but our customer service reps
only do so much.
It's not their, it's not their specialty, so they can get them somewhere, but we try and refer them to SWACA. And then we also have an environmental specialist who can, if it is an asbestos load, they can walk through how it's going to be handled. There are resources out there. And that's what the insert will intend to do. I think it's a lot of it's on that handout, but our office will walk through the rest of it. And we may just need to keep running that for the summertime, too. I'm not sure exactly. We'll see what happens.
And the handouts and flyers that were created were with the DIY homeowner in mind when we created them. And we have distributed them to places where they could get a building permit saved. So should you be a homeowner looking to get the building permit for your work, that information would be available there as well.
Cool. The last thing I would say on that is that we're just keeping track of, I think, we've been finding out indirectly that there might be groups of, associations that we might be able to reach out to kind of share and remind and update people on this information. What was the group, Mike? There was a renters.
Rental association.
So just through situations, through an employee call, a coworker calling us and saying my father was turned away and he's part of this group and he didn't know about it. And just making sure that we follow up with the best way to kind of make sure that these groups have this information. So from an outreach standpoint, directing some of the calls to the right places, but also just being proactive and identifying ways that we can talk to the right people that we may have not thought about or even knew existed. So I'm going to jump into some of the green program stuff. So overall, the Green Gala is coming up on February 22nd, and I have not been to one yet. I don't know if everybody here knows what that is, but it's basically a celebration of all of the green programs and a way for everybody that has been participating in success stories or participating in projects to get together, recognize each other, celebrate, and then it will be facilitated by a speaker from Waste Not Food Taxi, which is a local organization that's working to reduce wasted food and connect that food to populations and folks that need that food. So that'll be the keynote speaker, as well as award ceremonies and I think food and other events. But it's an evening activity to celebrate all the work that has been done in the community, and to celebrate successes and to make sure that we're celebrating those stories. So that is again on the 22nd, and there is a flyer on the table over there that gives a little bit more details about. But it is at Kiggins Theater on the evening of the 22nd. I'm excited to go. I don't know if I have to rent a tuxedo. So it's not that fancy, so show up in what you want to get. So, additionally, I was hoping, I think she is tied up at another event tonight, but we added Kaylee McLaughlin-Burton to our team. So she came from Columbia Springs Environmental Education Center here in Vancouver. So she is a program tech. So I think maybe last time I mentioned we were recruiting for that position. Kaylee has been with us for about 2 months now. And is supporting Michelle in the Green Schools program and Pete in the Master Composter, Master Recycler program, and is split, for the most part, depending on the seasonally, but on average is split between those two programs. And we'll hopefully be helping them focus in on tracking the right data and analyzing data. She's got some data background and some organizational background. So between her and all of our AmeriCorps folk, we have a pretty good staff program. And then we are also kind of jumping down into some of the other programs as far as recruitment goes with Green Neighbors. As you know, Sally Fisher had been previously our environmental outreach specialist for the Green Neighbors program. She moved up to a program coordinator position, kind of helping coordinate and organize all of the Green programs' outreach efforts. And we are currently in the midst of recruiting for Sally's environmental outreach Green Neighbors position. So we're hoping to, by the next SWAC meeting, have somebody in, by the next scheduled SWAC meeting, have somebody in place and on board taking charge with the environmental outreach work for Green Neighbors. One of the biggest things that's coming up for Green Neighbors, of course, is that they're in the throes of planning and recruiting for the Recycled Arts Fest that happens later this spring. So. We have a program tech, Jill, who is working with Sally to kind of help fill that role and make sure that nothing gets left behind while we recruit for this position. So everything looks like it's on schedule to happen just as it happened before, so we should be good. In the Green Business Program, the next morning blend is on the 15th. So February 15th, so again, that's just morning social networks with local area businesses, and they usually focus on a topic. As well as also Sarah is going to be working with the commercial work group out of Metro. So that is a work group made up of business outreach staff from City of Portland, Beaverton, Washington County, Clackamas County, all of the groups down there. And it's a so she'll be attending an event at the end of March, a 3-day event that's a networking and educational event for both the government staff and businesses to come and network with each other, get a chance to talk about success stories. So sort of like Sarah's morning blends, but on a much larger scale and a much larger networking, and try to come up with a plan for how to better engage businesses in all of the different green programs in the metro area. And then she'll follow that up with also taking a look at what is going on in the state as far as business outreach and business education in the solid waste world. So, in the Green Schools program, back in November 9th, we had the Green Schools Summit. 25 schools attended, about 100 students, and this was, again, it's sort of a networking educational opportunity where they talked about food mapping, sustainability in schools, plastics in the ocean, and then largely focuses on opportunities for schools to share success stories with each other, and make sure that we're doing as best we can to share what successes schools are seeing, the benefits of the work that they put into their programs, and also just a chance to share lessons learned. So that Green School Summit was successful back in November 9th.
Were you at the summit? Mm-hmm. Did you have anything you want to share about it? No,
this is, I think, my third year to go, and it's always really great. I take a small group of kids, and they get to talk to other schools, too, so they get ideas. I think it's, like, a really great way to boost their energy for the beginning of the school year.
They were really inspired, and they were like, we're going to get certified in 3 levels this year, and they really put in some work this year, so.
Okay.
Yeah, so I always really enjoy going, and I think changing it to Clark College was a really good move, because it used to be at the resource center, the water resource center.
Did it give it more of like an academic feel, like just being in a college campus for these kids? And
yeah, and just more space to spread out, because there are some classes, and so kids get to go to different spaces and just kind of a bigger area, because I think it had grown quite a bit, and so the Water Resource Center was kind of cramped. But I think, yeah, especially for the older kids, you know, they feel super cool being out of college.
I still feel super cool going out of college.
Yeah, it was really great.
Yeah,
went to college and it wasn't so cool.
Oh. Yeah, that's right. I forget about that. Other Green Schools updates. I think the biggest was the new website launched in September. And again, this website was just to update and kind of get a more modern aesthetic and modern feel to the website, but also tools like blogs and regular updates. Again, one of Michelle's big goals is to share the success stories that schools are having in the region. So updating blogs, updating information to make sure that these stories are getting told and that we're doing as good a job as we can and continue to improve to tell these positive stories and the positive outcomes that they bring. Otherwise, continuing to work on share tables at schools, which are sort of, they're just tables for students to share their food if they're not eating it. And I was actually at a school and saw, it's just a very interesting to watch who engages with the share table and how sitting there for a couple of lunch periods and watching who brings food there and who goes to get food that, and who depends upon that share table to, you know, to have food on certain days. So, it's an interesting resource and trying to figure out how to make that work better in all of the schools and get it in more schools. But just, you know, as a waste reduction tool is one thing, but also as an opportunity for, you know, just creating opportunities for that food to get eaten and not just composted or not wasted, but to put it in the hands of people that need it. Oh, yeah.
So is there any liability issue with that? Food from home, and what are the safety factors?
Yeah, so it's all food from the cafeteria. So normally, like, due to like public health codes and whatnot, that food all had to go into the garbage, even if it was like a packaged thing of Goldfish or whatever it was. And so Michelle, one of the things that's been actually valuable moving over to, really valuable for moving over to public health has been she's been able to work with food safety people and figure out solutions so that that food can be, you know, put, make sure it's sanitary and that there's not going to be, you know, cross-contamination or spoilage. So, like, they're able to put the milk, like, on an ice bath and then be able to either put it back into the cafeteria to be sent out again, or whatever kids are still thirsty can go to that share table and take that food and drink another carton of milk, whereas before they couldn't share it. So, yeah.
Are there schools that are still being kind of tricky with that, or how many?
I know Michelle, she had mentioned that the Vancouver School District was kind of the first ones to really get on board, that she was able to work with really well. And now Evergreen has jumped on board with that too, and she's been able to get that into a lot of schools. So
I think some of the Battleground School districts, I think the couple that I saw were at Battleground Schools as well. So
yeah.
One was all boxes of raisins.
Yeah.
It depends on the day. But yeah, I know it's growing, and I think she's seeking out more opportunities to do that. But I don't know if it's gone away from any of the schools that it's been implemented at. So.
I don't think so. And there are some limitations, like space-wise. Some schools don't really have, the cafeteria is really small, and they might not have space. So it's not always just because they're not on board with it, but they just might have other operational barriers.
And then lastly, I'll just talk real quick some updates on the Master Composter Recycler Series. So the 2018 series is underway. They currently have 37 members in this current class of Master Composter Recyclers. And I don't know what span this covers, but according to Pete, it is the largest class ever for the Master Composters.
Ever.
Is it ever or
of
ever
our,
since?
Yeah,
of our...
Of ours.
Of ours. Wow. So 37 new folks are going through the Master Composter Recycler Series, and that will be 37 new people putting hours into all of the various events and activities that we have going on around the county and providing more information out to the public. So that'll be going on through probably, I think, goes through the spring. I don't have this calendar here, but and I don't know how many details about this. I need to learn a little bit. I don't know exactly what the winner is or how they determine a winner, but they're doing a hot composting pile contest at Heritage Farm, which I think is a staff versus compost versus master composters class. So I don't know how they evaluate the winner, whose stuff decomposes the best, or is it the hottest, or the hottest the longest? So they're having a hot compost pile
competition.
Hot
without fire, right?
Yeah, they can't get fire. Yeah.
I am at WSU. They taught us at one of the demonstrations. They cooked the turkey in their hot compost pile. So,
I opted
not to eat that turkey, but and I don't know what our food safety folks would say about that. But they get hot. And also, there's a flyer over there that talks about the workshop series is set for spring, and the schedules are both on the website and then also that flyer. So a series of the workshops that we've got for gardening, composting, and I think the Master Composter's volunteer time feeds into providing some of those workshops and trainings as well. So.
Yeah, a lot of those volunteers lead those workshops, so they're a great asset.
Those are all of the updates I have, unless there's things that people had questions about or specifics that you've been waiting to hear, chomping at the bit to get updates on that I totally forgot about. Is there anything else you guys want to know about our green programs? Or? All right. That is it for my updates.
Are you going to wait until
so what?
The regional solid waste systems are meeting?
We can do that later.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So my update is done.
Outstanding.
Thank you.
Any questions, comments for Travis? All right. Shall we move to enforcement?
Sure. Yeah, here's Melissa Sutton. She'll give an update in the packet, or I think that'll be sort of around. There is a copy of the quarterly report. We didn't usually we'll put them in the packet. We'll put them in next time where we can send this out.
Oh, you know what?
We're sustaining, even though under the grant, we were required to submit those. And we haven't been under the grant, but we're just continuing to do the quarterly reports to continue to monitor progress and work in the program. And then there is, in that packet, is a copy of all the inspections and documentation that Melissa put together. It's a huge electronic file, but if anyone was interested in seeing some of that, let us know and we'll get you a copy.
So my name is Melissa Sutton. I am the Solid Waste Enforcement Coordinator for Clark County Public Health. I see some new faces in the audience, so welcome. I am in charge of inspecting all of our permitted solid waste facilities, such as our closed landfills, our transfer stations, as well as our next solid waste facilities, such as recycling centers, places that accept yard debris, etc. So just a little thing for those in the audience just thinking. So again, I sent this to Kim recently, so there should be a copy of this going around. I apologize if this did not go out. Our goal was to get this to you electronically. This quarter we had 26 complaints come in regarding solid waste. We closed 28, so miraculously, woo! It's always better when you close more than you get. But of course they have carryover from previous quarters. Just a couple of updates. A lot of our updates this time ended up falling under our exempt solid waste facilities. So those are our facilities that are exempt from a solid waste handling permit, but not exempt from regulation. So they would accept recycling material and yard debris. So through EH Metals, for those of you who've been on SWAC for a while, was a scrap metal recycler that started in 2012. We were notified March of 2015. I am happy to report that our community development has finally approved their land use zoning for them to operate as a legal scrap metal in our community. So we did not, they were really working with code enforcement as well as public health and trying to do all of the right steps to get things moving, so we never issued a cease and desist order, although we could have, but they were making the steps they were meant to do in the deadlines and timelines that were provided. However, due to some complications with their site, they are right along 503 or 502, 117th, and so they had some major traffic permitting craziness that ended up costing them
several thousand dollars to get their land use approval. So happy to report that they are finally happening now. They are officially approved, so yay. In the November inspection for City Park, you might see going around, they had quite a few violations. Don't necessarily fall under the exemption, but just going out there, I was able to see that they had some fluorescent bulbs that were stored inappropriately. They had some unlabeled drums of obviously unknown material, liquids that were stored in an unapproved manner, and as well as some stormwater concerns. So I was able to refer those over to Department of Ecology and also the stormwater folks for City of Vancouver. They issued a violation for their stormwater management, and City Park is now working with them on a compliance schedule. And so we're working with them. If they do not come into compliance, they will be in violation of their solid waste exemption. So you may have to work through. We have never had a facility violate the exemption and then have to make them become a permitted solid waste facility. So I'm not really sure how that works in the code exactly or how we make that process happen. But that may be coming to you in the future should they not come into compliance. But we're really hopeful that that they will get all of that taken care of. Royal Rangers is a kind of like a Boy Scout club that has a scrap metal collection area that we have approved as an exempt facility at the Manor Grange up by, I think it's 72nd and 179th in that vicinity. And they have approval, and it's kind of a land use zoning approval that they can have this there. They've been exempt from Department of Licensing, so they don't require the scrap metal recycler through Department of Licensing since they are a nonprofit. But when I did my inspection, they were beyond the footprint that was allowed for their planning department approval, so I referred that over to the planning department following my inspection. So I'm going to be doing more frequent inspections and making sure that they have everything contained in a fenced area like they're supposed to. So that's kind of a little bit out of the scope of public health, but working with other agencies to make sure that they're in compliance with the code ultimately. So there is a property in Yakult owned by the Moore family. Clark County Code Enforcement received a complaint about an extremely large volume of scrap metal, RV, boats, cars, car parts. When you look at the aerial map of the property, it is like a shining UFO from Google Earth. So I'm working with code enforcement and also Department of Licensing to perhaps have them become a exempt scrap metal recycler. The Department of Licensing has identified in their code that they enforce, if you have more than 12 transactions in a 12-month period, you are a scrap metal recycler. And they have documented from Metro Metals at least 50 transactions in the last 12 months. We were supposed to have a hearing on February 1st. The property owner requested a continuance at the hearing, which was granted. So our next hearing date is scheduled for February 28th. So we are working in partnership with code enforcement from a public nuisance abatement perspective, also presenting from public health that they're required to be a exempt solid waste facility, and also partnering with Washington State Department of Licensing and trying to get them on board to also present at that public hearing. So that will be available on CBTV, if any of you are interested in watching. Lady Island Landfill is owned by Georgia Pacific, as many of you know. They have their own special waste landfill there. They announced in November that they will be shutting down their boilers effective quarter two this year, so effective April or in that vicinity. What that means for our solid waste industry is that they will no longer be accepting hog fuel from our markets. I've been in communication with CRC. They have other
avenues for that to go. I am working with H&H. It's my understanding that a large majority of their hog fuel does go to Georgia Pacific. So I'm working with them to try to find alternatives for that material. So our hog fuel market, in addition to the other recycling markets, are quite fluctuating right now. And so trying to stay on top of that and how it impacts all of our facilities is important.
She brings down the term of hog fuel.
So,
So
what they do, so all of like the bulky wood waste, they grind it up into little wood chips, and those little wood chips are taken to the paper mills and burned to run their boilers for processing. So an alternative fuel source. Is that a good simplified version?
Perfect.
Okay.
It's just wood chips.
Yeah.
Yeah, it can vary in what the material type is, but you know, typically you get a blend of urban wood, so construction material, and then some woody, either yard debris or virgin material from the forest in some fashion. So you can get some
building material that's
clean wood. Clean wood.
No paint. No painted wood, no treated wood, no treated lumber.
Yeah.
So that is happening. Also, kind of as a side note, through all of our asbestos talk and with roofing coming up, Derek brought to our attention, hey, what about H&H? They have roofing. And it's a light bulb moment. So also working with them to also bring them in alignment with the whole asbestos so they're not getting turned away at CTR and then turning around, driving two blocks and taking it to H&H without that step. So working with Southwest Clean Air to have a good education system for that as well. Also, a couple of years ago, for those of you who have been on SWAC for a while, our Hinge meetings, we had the dead cow property, the infamous dead cow property that we've got to go to. That is winding up. Chuck and I met with the Bennett family, who's the property owner for that. The farmer of the deceased cow has also deceased. So now it is up to the family. They removed all of the manure, all of the animals. They spread manure at an agronomic rate. They're working with Park Conservation District. We've been working very closely with Park Conservation District in this effort. They've been out there several times. And we are kind of last outstanding issue is the dairy lagoon that they have there. It overflows and spills into a drainage ditch, which for reasons such as E. coli and other pathogens, we don't want that obviously going to surface water. So we're working with them to either, one of two options, either properly decommission the pond according to U.S. regs, or convert it to a freshwater pond for wildlife. So they are working with our conservation district to figure out which of those options would be most economical for their family. Because it's not viable for livestock at this time. Also, just a note, the SWANA, the Southwest Solid Waste Association of North America, is having a Northwest Symposium in Troutdale, April 18 through 20. So it's a very close conference. So you guys are all very interested in solid waste and solid waste topics, and it's close locations, so something good to think about and put on your calendars perhaps if you are interested in attending. The registration is finally available, and you can be a SWAN member and save $50 if you register by March 23rd. Chuck was going to give an update on Circle C when I'm done, but does anyone have any questions?
On the property that has all the cars, set RVs, and I've had experience having a hard time to get rid of an RV. And, so I don't know, where do RVs go that are like decommissioned? Because I know there's asbestos in them and things like that. And I couldn't get rid of it, I had a hardest time.
They are hard to get rid of. I think Derek
might. We refer baited upon you.
I'm sorry, he was the
yeah,
expert.
She
We, Oregon
DEQ has a date of 2004. That's fairly arbitrary, but that's a date that's used for asbestos purposes, and Armadillo Coast and Oregon landfills could be used that day as well. So newer than 2004, you can produce the title, it's solid waste and come in as normal. If you can't produce the title, what do you do then, Tanya?
You can call Washington State Department. Washington State Patrol, and they can do a bend for search, and they can.
I think we have to go landfill direct at that point. It's not something we'll handle at the transfer station, but even then, you're going to have counties.
Cowlitz County has a landfill.
Cowlitz County.
So does Wasco County.
Wasco County has a landfill.
Yeah, it's just about as far.
It's a weird little niche, because I couldn't find anywhere that would take it. Spent weeks trying to figure out the place, and finally ended up putting it on Craigslist, and just went to some random rural place that I don't know how they dealt with it.
It probably was a sleeping castle. It sounds just like that.
Yeah. I think I saw that RV parked outside my condo building.
Well, and I just might add that there is some legislation proposed currently in the Washington legislature to try and create a fund to help with the disposal of these RVs, because it does seem like what's been happening is they've just been shuffling around.
Right.
And the way I got involved is our police department has to tow them out of the right-of-way when they're completely abandoned, which is not what I'm encouraging people to do, completely abandon them in the right-of-way. But when they become a nuisance, they tow them, and then these tow companies are left with them. So we've been trying to work with the tow companies. How do they then dispose of it if they're not able to sell it at auction? Because they are actually able to sell some at auction, but then if they don't, they're like, well, what did we do with this?
Yeah.
We took it down to Derek, and he won't have anything to do with it. These are not the 2004 and newer ones. We've been around since, 60s, 70s.
Right.
So I guess stay tuned. We're all trying to figure it out together.
Okay.
And I've been talking with a lot of folks across the way, Beaverton, Hillsboro, Gresham. They're all kind of in a quandary. Like, what are we going to do with these things? And how do we get rid of them?
And going back to Derek's original comment, that is exactly why we refer everyone to talk.
Yeah.
So is it the asbestos issue that is...
There's multiple things. So sometimes when they're abandoned, they come with needles in them, wet clothing, it's mildew, it's mold. So once you clean all that out, then the structure itself has a lot of adhesives, and it's the adhesives that have asbestos. And something that we've all kind of learned doing this asbestos research is it's still being used in current manufacturing. So there's some beliefs out there that, oh, this is a new home, so there's no asbestos concern. And that's not the case. And Southwest Clean Air was very clear that no matter what, even if it's a modern structure, if it's got these adhesives, you still need to test it for asbestos because it can't contain it. And that's what these structures have, is a lot of glues and things that hold them together that make them lightweight and portable. But then at the end of its life, it's difficult to get rid of. So we're going to experiment with some asbestos abatement contractors who usually work with buildings and see if there a way that they can pull them in and double wrap them, and then that's a way to dispose of an old RV without, releasing too much of the asbestos. You want to disturb it as little as possible. And since I could probably go on all day about asbestos, I'll just stop there.
So I'll just cover a couple things real quick. So I know that most of you that have been here, we've been working, we have a former limited purpose landfill, Circle C. It's up in the center, just off of I-5. We've been working with them. It's actually been a couple of years now, trying to find criteria. They've been on a post-closure permit since about 1998. Which requires monitoring of wells, gas, although they're not really monitoring gas. It happened because the gas production went way down. And it was just like construction debris type. And then leachate monitoring, et cetera. So they have all these requirements under that permit. They pay a yearly fee for that permit. They ask to get out of that permit. The state has guidance around closing, around terminating post-closure, but there's no code, there's no specific process. So we've been working with them to try to define criteria that would allow them to get out of the permit. And basically, in a nutshell, would be, is the landfill stable? Are there any contaminants, either leachate or groundwater, that would impact public health or environmental? And so that's what we've been trying to, just overall guiding principle. We have a table I presented at past meetings. So then last April, we had a meeting with our board of health, where we presented our draft criteria. The owners and their representatives appealed that we were asking for too much, too many parameters, it was going to be expensive. So we've been working with them since then to try to look at where can we help define criteria that still meets those objectives that I stated a second ago, but offers them some flexibility to not have a huge burden with sampling, et cetera. So we've been kind of getting their feedback, providing them our feedback, working with ecology in certain arenas where we don't have in-house expertise. And right now we haven't settled on the final criteria. As soon as we do, we'll certainly share it with SWAC. We're also asking the board of counselors, since we had the big meeting with them, how they want to hear from us on when we get to that point with the owners. And we are actually updating the board Monday morning on where we are in negotiating and trying to settle on final criteria. And then the plan would be, once we settle on final criteria around gas, because they are going to resample for gas around site stability, you know, just basically, is there any settling that's significant enough that it's not still stable yet? Leachate management and groundwater sampling, to look at the groundwater impacts. They would then move forward with sampling, that sampling, and if they met all the criteria that we've agreed to, then we would have the health officer release them from this post-closure permit. So it's been a long process, and it's certainly been somewhat contentious because, again, it's this wasn't a landfill, I think, near the end of its life in the late 80s, early 90s. They did start to collect additional fees to help fund going, but that fund was expended years ago. The family, they're not making any income off of the property right now. So we're trying to find that place where they can do the works needed so we can ensure public health protection. And but obviously, if they just can't do it, we don't know what's going to happen at that point. If they can't do the sampling and measurements needed. So we're still trying to work through that with them. So we'll update you. Hopefully by the time we have the next SWAC meeting, we'll have settled on criteria or know that they just can't do it. I don't know yet. The other things I just wanted to mention was, one is I went to the Green Awards, and that was really very cool, and the staff to put that together did a great job. So I think if you do have a little time, that's pretty good event to go to. And that's it.
Thanks, Chuck. City of Vancouver update.
Hi, I'm going to go ahead and give that. Just two things, maybe one, depending on it. My name is Tanya Wright. I'm the supervisor for the Solid Waste Program in the City of Vancouver. And, you know, it seems like fall is a distant memory now. We zip through winter and it seems like we're in spring. But I have wonderful stats about our regional fall leaves collection program. So in beginning in the October 1st, the City of Vancouver and Clark County offer disposal coupons for fall leaves at four different locations that the city has a contract with. They go out through the recycling refresher newsletter that's sent to every mailbox in Clark County, letting everybody know they can dispose of their leaves for free. They're offered on our websites. They're handed out at Clark Regional Wastewater District, City Hall, also here at the Public Health Center, I believe they were handed out. So we try to make them available to all residents and encourage them to not sweep their leaves into the street because we don't have programs that can handle that, and instead to collect their additional leaves and take them to one of these processors. That helps keep the leaves out of the street and prevents localized flooding, and also make sure that that material gets to a compost facility and is turned into a product that can then be used. So last year we actually had a record number of yards collected. We had 23,429 yards collected through the program. The previous year we had 16,242 yards. So that was a 44% increase in yards overall. So sometimes we don't have really good explanations. It seems to be dependent a lot on the weather, or was there a lot of rain or a lot of wind? So it seemed like the conditions were ideal to get a lot of yards. We did have about a 20% increase in the amount of coupons collected as well. So we would call that a successful year. And we look forward to operating it again next year. We're also going to see if we can't dial in some efficiencies, because when you are handling about 7,000 coupons, which is what we have, 7,000 coupons collected at the different locations, you're getting them from four vendors, and then you're having to divide them between how many were county and how many were city, it becomes very tricky to do that efficiently. So we're going to work on that and see if we can dial that in and make it even more efficient. And then another update I'll give you that's pretty city-centric. We've had some challenges with collecting garbage and litter that is in the downtown area. There are folks that are in the parks or also camping in the public areas, which is permitted from 9:30 in the evening till 6:30 in the morning, and they may not have access to trash removal on a regular basis. So the City of Vancouver had some funds left over that we usually set aside for Clark County Sheriff's crews to collect litter in parks and rights-of-way throughout the city, but we weren't spending all that money. So we diverted some of that and created a community cleanup grant and worked with Share to hire a supervisor and then three cleaners that would be a crew that would go through the downtown and focus on that area. And with the funds we had, they worked 3 days a week. The three crew members were specifically from the shelter. So they were people who were experiencing homelessness or otherwise working with Share, and they were given an opportunity to have a paying job to help us collect trash in the downtown. We felt that program was successful, but we needed more than just 3 days. It's actually something you have to attend to on a regular basis. So we got permission from council to increase the funding for that, and they're now working 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, 8 hours. Going out each day of the week to collect trash in the downtown and other areas that we identify through our crews or through people who call in with concerns or complaints about litter, and they go out and collect that litter. And they are also receiving job skills training through Partners in Careers, putting together their resumes and working on a pathway out of their homelessness situation. So I'll keep you updated on that program as we go along. Any questions?
Thank you. Waste Connections.
So, Derek Grant with Waste Connections, District Manager for Operation Clark County. I'll go over a couple things. This is typically the meeting where I come and tell you about all the winter weather issues we had, and luckily I don't have to report that this year. Last year we missed, I can't remember, about a dozen days of service. This year we had one event on Christmas, the day after Christmas. And we canceled routes in only in our rural section for one day. It happened to be the day that we were in a particularly bad part of the county, but we did have pretty bad snowstorms. If you guys all remember, actually it was residual from the ice and snow that happened on Christmas Eve was a bigger issue. So we canceled service to about 3,000 customers that day, picked them up the following week. And then we did have one additional afternoon 2 weeks ago. Always on Thursday, and the Thursday customers last year accused us of jerry-rigging the weather, you know, to punish the Thursday customers. And again, this year, the one issue we had was on Thursday again. So we had a kind of a freak snowstorm a few Thursdays ago where we got real cold, and there was some snow up in the mountains. And so we we missed about 250 customers that day due to the weather. And then we went back and got them last week for garbage, and then the second this week. And it's an area, it's up on, what's the mountain?
Livingston
Mountain. And they traditionally are missed every year, a couple times during the year. So they're pretty used to it, not happy about it, but they're pretty used to the program. So, but it went pretty well in general, I think. We're very happy with the weather. And then the other thing really that we're focusing on, we talked about asbestos, that's been a huge issue the last week. But then I know we got the China's National Sword and Recyclables update. I have to leave a little bit early to attend to some kids. So I'll give you my sense on it, if you're okay with that right now. We're seeing West Van down in our MRF. And we've gone over it, I think, a couple of times already, but obviously China changed the standards on what is acceptable material, what they're going to allow in the country for prohibitives, particularly on paper and plastics is what they're focusing on. They've settled on a hardcore 0.5% contamination of raw material. They won't accept any material that is above that. We had an inspector come by today from the CCIC, which is the Chinese, I can't remember what it stands for, but we tested out at 0.65% on our paper, which is actually really good. And in the lower right corner, she wrote not qualified. So that goes back to the Chinese government, and we will not be shipping any paper from Clark County to China this month. So we'll try again next month. But we're not unique, as I understand it. There's very few people in the industry that are shipping into China. Most of the people that are shipping into China are the brokers that work directly for the mills, and they bring in their own material, and you know, they have the ability to work that system. The good news is we do have markets for most of our paper that we generate right now. It's domestic, and then there's a little bit international, so other countries are accepting materials. So we're removing most all the paper that we create right now. The bad news is we don't create as much paper as we used to because we have to clean it up so much. Mechanically, just the way the system works, you previously would have some incidental material that might flow into the paper bales. So your paper bales were a little bit higher contamination, and that was acceptable. It would go out. And a lot of times it's liner board or small chunks of cardboard or things that are fibrous in nature. They are pure paper, but they would be acceptable. And that material is not going into paper, and we're still trying to find an outlet for that. But most of the rest of the material is moving pretty well, just prices have gone down. So you know, we will sometimes have to pay to get rid of not landfill, but we'll have to pay just to get it to a far distant market that'll take the material. Whereas paper might have sold for $100 a ton a year or two ago, it's you're paying maybe $10 a ton to get rid of it instead. So cardboard was up in the $150 range. It's down in the $80 to $90 range right now. So so the market's taken a pretty big tumble in the last couple months. And I'm sure Travis will talk more about kind of ramifications on what that means. We kind of wanted to wait and see, get through January, let the standards settle in, what were the real standards going to be, and I think we have a good idea where they're going to be at. They're holding hard on that, and now we've got a chance to kind of move forward from here.
Is it true, so as I understand also, that other countries that we're shipping to are taking advantage of this overall regulation put out by China to also take that opportunity to tighten up their own restrictions? Is that, are we seeing...
Yeah, I mean, just we shipped material to Korea at first, and then Korea got on board at the same standard, so Korea closed up. And we're moving it. Most of our material moved through brokers, and so they're kind of finding markets for us. And so, you know, we hear of Vietnam and India and other markets, and it's just that much more expensive to get it there. So that's the biggest issue there. And then you get some spoilage, you know, while you're waiting to find a market for it, there's the chance you get some spoilage of your materials. Our goal is to keep it undercover, keep it dry, keep it good. And that's always a good.
Do you have questions, Mom?
I did. So, just curious, and you don't have to elaborate, but when they're evaluating, you said there's a woman that may have checked.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do they just look, how do they test for that?
They will come in and they'll break a finished bale. Mm-hmm. So they'll take a bale, break it up, and then they'll take a sample of that bale and then weigh the paper versus the prohibitives that might be in the material. So they'll look for that. You know, I've heard stories of bales, we haven't experienced this, but bales containing, you know, one aseptic milk container or something like that, and it got rejected. Oh. If you're in Legends, I don't know. But there are. I have talked to other merc processors that have had that happen, and then that one bale containing a few prohibitives in it canceled the whole load of 30 bales of material. And then maybe even the order of, you know, 10, 30 bale loads. So it's a tough market right now. I know a lot of the state associations are in major conversations about what does this mean, what do we do going forward. And, you know, we try not to make any decisions at the highs and the lows because, you know, eventually it comes back to the middle somewhere. But it feels like we're kind of in the middle, and so we may just have to adjust that in some fashion.
So from a, I guess we'll go into the, yeah, the, from a, county preparation, from a county side of things, again, working with, we're both participating in both Oregon, like DEQ and Metro's conversations, as well as Washington State's conversations. And it's my sense that Oregon Metro's conversations are a little bit further along. They've been having this conversation a little bit longer. At least that's my sense. It seems like the conversations in Washington are just starting to ramp up. But the general consensus is that there's a lot of reasons that we're in this situation, and to not make drastic changes at the high or low, like Derek said, but also recognizing that if some of our more drastic changes may take a while to take effect, right? So if we are looking at the things that are contaminating these loads, whether they're on the list or not the list, I think one of the things that regions are looking at is the list of recyclable materials and whether that's part of the problem, but also recognizing how slowly or how quickly changing those lists or reacting to list of recycling materials, how long it would take for that change to have an impact at the curb. Somebody brought up the point that plastic bags have never been in the curbside collection program, and they're a problem. So things that are in there and that people are used to being able to recycle. But what we're trying to do and what we're working with both Oregon and Washington on is how do we start a different type of conversation with our public about what their involvement in the system is, and that it is a big problem, but that one of the fastest ways that we can help mitigate having loads rejected is to be better at using the system that exists right now. So I think we have a partnership right now where kind of the first thing we started right after, was it probably before the new year, we started with what we're calling the Resilient Recycler blog, that we are partnering with the City of Vancouver and Waste Connections to identify, kind of start at a high level of this is the situation, capitalize on the fact that this is a media topic and that a lot of people hear about this through various media, especially with Portland and Metro and DEQ taking bigger, stronger actions, and they're our news source for a lot of people. So, but being able to start the conversation that, hey, we've got a situation, maybe a crisis that's happening right now, we need your help to kind of be a little bit better about what we're recycling while we work on the long-term solutions to this problem. So this Resilience Recycler blog is geared towards identifying some of these bigger contamination issues that we're seeing, the materials that are showing up in the MRFs or in these bales that are causing them to be problematic. Although 0.65 is amazing.
Yeah.
I don't know how much. Yeah. So, you know, just identifying that there were some immediate fixes that CRC implemented that has seen some success. I don't know to what extent our communication is getting out to the public, but just here's the fastest way to solve this problem is to just be better at using the system as it exists. So that Resilient Recycler, but also making sure that we have the public depends on us to make sure that the materials that they value as recyclable materials are getting recycled. So how do we engage in sort of open and honest conversation with our public about we might have to landfill some of our recyclable materials while we find a long-term solution to this problem. And it stinks, right? It's not something we want to be doing, but it's sort of a thing that might have to be done in the interim. And how do we leverage that information to motivate our public to be a little bit better about using the recyclables, but also kind of stepping back and look at all the reasons that we're in this situation and working with the MRFs, working with the state, working with everybody along the way to make sure that we find the solutions that will be long-term and we're not just dealing with the same thing in 2 or 3 years the next time something tanks, but that we're a little bit better prepared. So that Resilient Recycler blog is at least was our initial reaction to beginning this conversation with our public, so that when we need to, that this conversation has already started, and that when we need to make some changes or we need to come to the public asking for more information or more help, that they're already up to speed on what's going on and not necessarily caught off guard by what's going on. So, but otherwise, from a state level, like I said, the conversations are just getting going. WSRA and Ecology are kind of organizing conversations, and I'll introduce Greg a little bit later, but he may have some more insight as to what's happening as far as the state level at Ecology goes, but it's premature. But Greg, do you have any other input on, sorry, I'll introduce you in a second, but do you have any other knowledge or insight that might be helpful from an ecology standpoint on this?
I would like to say it is unfortunate the state stance as far as ecology is. I regret saying that we are maybe like a step or maybe even a floor beneath what I've seen throughout the EQ. The regulatory environment is a little bit different between the two, so maybe that's been a catalyst in Oregon. Plus there's some real smart folks working in Oregon. I'm amazed by some of the staff there. There's also the delicate balance of affecting government, kind of affecting businesses in a way. And so what is the role of state government trying to incentivize and create markets without, you know, being unfair to some components within business? It's always been a delicate balance there, I feel. The only thing I would say is some of the exempt facilities, there's a rule change that's occurring. And within 18 months, these exempt facilities that Melissa was alluding to earlier, maybe not all of them, but some of them, they will be required to get permits in 18-ish months. What may happen in the next little while is some of these facilities might get inspections and just be encouraged to get that permit sooner than later. What is happening, though, for these facilities that have to landfill this material is not any result of them. It's a result of the system going in a direction and China finally putting the brakes on this. If I'm with my brothers, I would not want to see the United States as a whole, or at least the West Coast, shopping around to the next bidder, which is the lower bidder being Indonesia, Vietnam. These countries are also responsible for the majority of the leakage that goes on into marine debris. I look at what Travis was saying, as a crisis, there is an opportunity, and I hope that that opportunity is to make these domestic markets more robust and more resilient. Very easy said, very hard to do. So hopefully that is the direction that we go in. Other than that, though, I don't have a whole lot to add other than some philosophical statements on this.
That's great, thanks. But yeah, I do feel like this is a really good opportunity to kind of step back and look at some things that maybe, you know, all of these materials are coming from someplace, and we'll talk a little bit about in legislative updates, but the idea of the producers of material being responsible for the end of life of their material, and we haven't changed our program in a very long time as far as what we do collect as recyclables. But I feel like there's a perception that list does change more frequently than it actually does. And I have a sense that it's largely due to the types of materials that come into our homes change, and the categories that exist are constant, but the materials that are coming in are a little bit different. So how do we also engage upstream in this overall conversation about we're dealing with materials that are coming into our homes and into our lives? I don't know what that conversations look like, but my hope is that this also sheds light and puts a little bit more hope on the idea of involving the entire life of a material into consideration where we're trying to solve this problem. Obviously, that's a more long-term solution. I think what I'll sum up is that there's a series of short-term, mid-term, and then what are we going to do about this long-term? And short-term is about engaging with the public in a meaningful way to make some changes that will actually stick. And some of the more technological, like some of the short-term, you know, slowing down the MRF, moving markets around. So from there, and there's a lot of short-term, but how quickly we move on the mid- and long-term ones, we want to be careful that we're not reacting at an extreme and setting ourselves up for problems. So. Are there any other questions on this? I'm just going to keep talking if nobody stops me.
Well, I totally like that concept of trying to figure out how to get producers more engaged in the disposal process. Yeah, I don't know how the SWAC can get involved in that. So if there's a way that we can write letters or get engaged, that would be interesting.
Yeah, that was actually going to be one of the next things that we talk about. So if I want to be respectful of Derek's need to go do stuff with kids.
I guess also, yeah, sorry.
My wife has to be somewhere by 8.
So the MRF is the processing line, the sorting line?
Correct.
Okay. And so you've just been slowing that down, is that?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I slowed it down, we've added staff, pretty much maxed out mechanically and human labor-wise what we can throw at it.
Mm.
And still it's a challenge. And the key has been, you know, saving the paper, which is such a large portion of what's in the cart, you know, trying to save that commodity still, knowing what, you know, all these little pieces of it together. And part of it is, you know, plastics have become that much more thin. So the mechanics that were designed in our system 2009, you know, had a different type of material in mind, so they're squishing the plastic a little bit more, and it's getting in that paper a little bit more, and so it's just all these little pieces of it, you know, that are involved in it.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, we can do the mechanics of it, we get everything else and get that as perfect, but certainly I think there's a lot that needs to be done at the curve as far as what we've done, and we participate as well, you know, when markets change, we're a for-profit entity, so of course we're going to say, yeah, sure, bring that material in, no problem. And then mm-hmm. that takes off, you know, and then that becomes prohibitive at some point when the market collapses for that. So,
yeah.
You know, certain types of plastics, we've kind of done that over the years. You know, I think the Washington Refuge and Recycling Association, Oregon Refuge and Recycling Association, they really want to narrow down to a very basic list of, you know, paper, cardboard, ones and twos, plastics, and aluminum and tin. And then if a community chooses to add or subtract from that list, or add to that list, then that's up to them, mm-hmm. essentially. And they can go out and seek pricing for that, I suppose, or whatever that might be.
Cool.
And that slowing down, I think I heard it described best as like shutting down two lanes of I-5. The same amount of cars are still coming through.
Yeah.
So while it would be great to just keep slowing it down, there's still material coming in at the same rate, if not more.
Yeah.
So, like, right, it seems like if you could slow it down. It
seems like triple the size of the belt and...
Can you just do that?
It's pretty easy. We'll try to do that tonight. I'm convinced the machine has a magic dial. And I always tell the guys, I said, just mess with the magic dial. And they're like, they don't let me touch it.
Suspend people from the ceiling too.
Yeah. Or a Cirque du Soleil solution to nerve. So, but it's a unique problem that it's not one. There's not one root cause. It's from beginning to end.
Yeah.
There's a series of people and a series of parties, and there's just a lot of root causes. And any one is expensive and timely to implement. But, you know, how do you? What is the best combination of things we can implement? Slowing down the belt was one solution, but that's only goes so far.
Yeah.
Outreach will only get us so far. You know, what are we going to do in the long run? So if you guys have any ideas?
Yeah, should away as quick.
Other than triple sizing the,
it's a great time to open a paper mill.
Yeah.
Yeah, been
a lot of material available.
So has Portland seen any benefit with their bag ban over this?
If you talk to the processors in Portland, certainly it's had some improvement, but there's still a lot of plastic film that gets into it. But they also, you know, Far West Recycling, it's hard for them because they'll take material from Portland, but they'll also take it from Clackamas County and areas outside of Portland where the plastic bags are still very prevalent in the stream. So it's, you know, if you don't do it in the whole state or the whole waste shed,
right,
you're not going to see the impact. I mean, we still employ 3 or 4 people every shift twice a day to get in and cut plastic bags out of our sort of line at the end of the sorting.
Bags and film.
And film.
Which then do not subsequently get recycled.
Correct.
They just get cut out and thrown.
There's no market for dirty plastic bags off the store, so it is garbage.
So, convey to your friends and family how to properly participate in the system as it exists, and we will continue to make the system better. I think that's basically the gist of what we're trying to do.
Sounds like the Master Compost Recycler program.
Yes, yeah. There you go.
The county.
All right. Are we on to the legislative update?
Sort of. So here's what I want to propose to SWAC. There is a laundry list of bills in the House and State Senate that are addressing various environmental issues. Anything from, and so what I was thinking about was creating a list that sort of summarized all of the House bills, and then WSRI did that for me today, and they sent out a list. But rather than read through all of the lists, because I am only up to speed on a few, and there's a phone call tomorrow that I'm participating on that'll give a more of a legislative update from Washington State Association of Counties, is what I would like to propose is that take this list of current policy and current policy and legislative updates, and put that in Kim's follow-up email to SWAC. And I am also going to talk about in a few minutes the potential need for a March SWAC meeting. And so to provide you time to read through the bills, the potential bills, and then to work with you to decide if there's any, such as the paint, you know, as an independent entity, if SWAC wants to advocate or go through letter writing or whatever the process is to support any of the bills that are currently being considered at any of the levels. And then to identify it that as make that part of the next SWAC meeting that we probably will need to have in March. Potentially need to have in March, and then make that part of the agenda is what is the role of SWAC and how do we go forward with enabling you to support the things that you want to support. Rather than sit here and read through a list of bills that all I will know is what is written here in the summary and a little bit more information, since I haven't gotten a status update in a little bit. So I wanted to kind of throw that out to SWAC as a possibility. But to kind of talk through, you mentioned if you wanted to support, what does the process look like, and what is the opportunity for SWAC to support bills at a state level as an independent entity? So kind of wanted to see what you guys thought about that process.
So what I'm hearing is you open the brakes on this portion until we get more information, we get a chance to read it, digest it a little bit, and potentially come back next month and talk about it.
Yes. Yeah, that would be what I'm proposing. And then by tomorrow, too, there's a statewide phone call that I'll be participating in that will give us a little bit more update on some of these so that I can build on this already existing list and provide some more real-time updates to you guys and can kind of keep feeding those weekly phone call information to you regarding some of the bills and highlight the ones that you guys are most interested in following up on and tracking. So, yeah, that is my proposal. Basically.
Our next meeting, is that too late? Or?
Well, so there's a potential need, given that our next topic of conversation, to convene SWAC in March due to the CPG, now Local Solid Waste Financial Assistance Grant, coming back into effect, that we may need to come to you with a plan that we don't have right now sooner than our next SWAC meeting. So we were also going to propose a convening of SWAC in March to provide feedback on applying for grants from the state. So, you know.
Speaking of myself, I think that's a great idea, because I would like to be able to come through and have a little before bedtime material to read. be able to come back and discuss it as a group.
I wonder if the what you're forwarding, does that have any details about the timeline? I know the legislature has sort of like cutoff periods, and maybe some of the bills there we'll find out in the next week their expiration date's gone, and others may continue forward.
Yeah,
does that give any of that detail there? Or?
What I've worked, so I think you would also forward this. So the WSRA is just a very high level, so that would be a starting point where then we could go through, I could go through and pull out more timeline relevant information, and I'll be getting more timeline information tomorrow from WASAC, and especially relating to some of the solid waste ones. And I also don't want to filter any away, because there might be some, you know, there's some that are related to solid waste, there are some that are you know, I'm sure that this SWAC is not interested in hearing about the sales of growlers of wine.
Wait, what?
Yeah. So kind of filtering that list out and providing, you know, doing a little bit more in-depth research, providing a more detailed summary and a timeline. And then if you have further questions, that's something that you can kick back to me and I can do a little bit more research on. So, but yeah, I didn't have time to go through and get all the timelines on these, but I am grateful that WRSA at least sent out a list that starts a summary, a high-level summary of all of the bills that are up for consideration. And then I'll use that as a starting point to send out a more detailed summary for everybody, with including links to the actual, you know, content of the bills, so you can also dig in as much as you want to dig into. So. Does that answer your question? Is that what you're...
Yeah, it's not selling your plan to be kind of... Are there any objections to that?
Cool.
So looking at your calendars, that would potentially be...
How many words for me? I'll go through this for you.
First Thursday of March would be March 1.
No, I can't make that one.
Should we do that? Can we, for the sake of time, not to be disrespectful to your process, would it be okay if we discussed future dates so that we can get up? We're a few more items and 20 minutes left. Can we work on finding a date towards the end with extra time or at a later time?
We could do a doodle poll. Have you guys done doodle polls before? Mm-hmm. We could organize. I could facilitate that and then send
it
out.
Okay. Do that.
Cool.
Solid waste tip fee update.
So this is partially one of the things I was going to talk about under legislative update and actually feeds into our March meeting conversation. So I'm going to invite Greg Gahowski from the Department of Ecology, who's already talked, but I'm going to ask him to come up to the table and talk a little bit more, just to give a brief update on... there was a formerly known as the Coordinated Prevention Grant from the state of Department of Ecology that allotted money to counties for solid waste enforcement and the implementation of waste reduction programs. And a while ago, we came to you to talk about our. I assume that we talked to you about our $1.43 tip fee increase that took effect on January 1 in order to recover funds that were lost from the state or potentially lost or potentially reduced and allow our programs to go a little bit further. Have now, this is the return of CPG or the, that's a little dramatic, but so Greg is our representative or our coordinator for our county and our liaison with the Department of Ecology in relation to this new local solid waste financial assistance grant. So I'm going to let him provide an update and a summary of what happened and where we're at right now, and then I'll talk a little bit more about our next steps.
Yeah, sure. So these funds, unfortunately, have gotten smaller over the history of them. They're tied to an account that's often referred to as them within the Model Toxics Control Act. Not me that's taking the funds away, I apologize. So this is the lowest that they've ever been. Just so you know, I am fairly new to ecology too. Before that, I was on behalf of Thurston County, very much like you, Travis, your staff. So I've been a recipient of these grant funds and work underneath them, and now I'm administering them on behalf of the staff, or on behalf of the state. So that'll be my role too. I also play a dual prong role. When this agency starts to revamp or update the solid waste management plan, that's also my role. So I'll be doing two levels of customer service, so to speak, for Clark County. So we'll be starting this friendship together today. But yeah, unfortunately, these grant funds have gotten smaller. They were also delayed with the holdup of the capital budget. They were passed, what was it, two and a half weeks ago, somewhere around then. And a curveball that came out of left field to us too is the governor signed this and put an addendum to it that said that counties can also charge back to the originally intended date, which would have been July 1st, 2017. We didn't know that. It's a blessing. However, what I'm starting to see is only a handful of counties can actually tap into their books that far, which is unfortunate. A lot of times solid waste enforcement folks, they're able to do this because for different reasons, it's easy to tease those tasks and those charges out. Finding implementation bit more diverse, a bit more complex as far as the nature of what they're being used for, so it's a bit more challenging. But I'm trying to have these conversations now to ensure that any of these back charges, as far back as either entity wants to go, they can make sure that they're eligible now and that we ride this out. So as soon as these applications are ready, we're all on the same page and we're moving forward. Because now we've taken this two-year cycle and abbreviated it, and we're also abbreviating those funds. What that means, though, is twofold. We need to use these funds efficiently and effectively, but my agency, me, is now having a keener eye on what these funds are being used for. Melissa and Chuck, you guys use your funds, copy, paste, repeat every year. That's fine, no problem. It's more the planning and implementation side. We'll be using those funds because there's not as much of them as efficiently and effectively as possible. And that means I'm asking more thorough and more complex questions and detailed questions about what they're being used for. But that's why I want to have these conversations in this relationship and come down and meet these folks face to face and try and use this as best as we can, because again, I was a recipient in the past for these funds. So Travis, if he hasn't, he can update you on the allocation amounts. There's a 25% match that's required with those too. I'll let you communicate that. But unfortunately, they are smaller. We're working on efforts in our end to make sure to at least sustain what we have now as we move into the 19-21 biennium. It's weird to say that. But maybe even try to make them more robust and increase them over time, because it's unfortunate that these amounts have dwindled, because they're used for some bare bones and then some really good projects to give back to the community. The project I worked on in Thurston County was a food rescue project that essentially made sure food wasn't entering the waste stream and gave it to those folks in need, which is one of the best projects I've ever been able to work on, to be quite honest. Not to undermine general recycling, there's always enforcement, but it was really a cool project that helped the community out in the Olympia area. So that's kind of the update. The funds are available very shortly, but they're technically available now because you can back charge for them. You just need to ensure that the costs are eligible, and that's where I provide my customer service, so to speak, and work with the counties as much as possible. So I will be down here more often. It's not a problem for me to travel down this way. This is what I like to do. So hope to be able to just work with you guys as much as you want or as much as you don't want.
So next steps for us, now that this has come to fruition, we do need to apply. So prior to my coming here, Solid Waste staff had put together a prioritized list of projects that they had anticipated applying for when we thought CPG would have traditionally begun their application process. Since then, we went to council and asked for a $1.43 tip fee increase to cover the costs of core program work, to cover the cost of our work for both Chuck's program enforcement and solid waste implementation, so the projects that we do. And we promised them at that point that we would come back to council if and when the capital budget was passed and there was any money put into CPG. So now what we are working on is putting together a proposal for what we would like to see is to maintain the $1.43 in order to support our services and use CPG or local solid waste financial Department of Ecology dollars to do additional work that will either make our programmatic work more effective and more impactful, or to do research and data or additional projects that we had not been able to accomplish under the $1.43 tip fee increase. So what we need to do is we're working with our leadership team, so Alan Melnick, our director, as well as all of the other directors from environmental health or from public health, to put together a plan and a proposal for a March workshop with the council. For us to be able to get a sense of what they for us to talk about what we hope to accomplish. We have our list of prioritized projects that the staff put together. We have a summary of our programs that we are offering, and to put together a list of projects that we hope to accomplish with this additional funds from Ecology. But prior to going to talk to them is to come to our advisory council and get feedback and support from the council and make sure that what we're putting together is something that the groups that also advise us and support us can also support and stand behind. So hence the need for a convening. I don't know if it's a special convening. I don't know if there's a formal title for what this is called. But given the fact that we need to meet with our council in March, I think mid-March. Is that what we're looking at? Is it mid or late March? Since we were not able to, since we kind of have learned about this and are understanding the process, too late to put together anything for this SWAC meeting. And by next SWAC meeting, it'll be too late. So to convene a meeting in March will be very helpful in getting feedback, but also support from this SWAC so that we can go to our council and say we've vetted our stakeholders and our partners. And this is what they said, and this is what changes we've made based on their suggestions and feedback, and then go to council for them to ultimately dictate what ends up happening and what combination of outcomes they see being the best for the county, whether it's from the extreme of yes, go ahead and do everything you asked to do, apply for all the money and keep the tip fee, to we're getting rid of the tip fee altogether and we want you to go back to this grant funded program altogether. So we have, I think there's some optimistic feeling given that they supported us. There was unanimous support for funding and continuing our programs on both implementation and enforcement, that they will work with us to find opportunities to do what we feel is best for our program, but want to be respectful of the fact that they have the ultimate say in what we end up doing. So we'll come to you first. So that's that special meeting in March. And then after that, once we get direction from council, we'll begin the application process where we'll then again start working with Greg on making sure that we put together plans that are acceptable to both what we need them to accomplish, but also to what measurables and outcomes and deliverables ecology needs to see in order to defend. They're giving us the dollars in the first place. So we'll also be getting ecology's feedback or blessing or support if we can, or help with language when we go to council as well. So a couple of steps that need to happen between now and, it's already February, so next month, but it's a really great opportunity to do a lot more work than we were already doing. So that's the solid waste tip fee update, other than the fact that it took effect on January 1st of this year and that we're expecting our first payment here soon. So we'll see what that process looks like, and the transfer of money from Waste Connections or CRC to us with that tip fee, and we'll see what that looks like.
Natural sorted recyclables update. Did we cover everything?
Yeah, I can't think of anything else to say on that unless anybody else hasn't said anything yet. So,
So I have a presentation I was going to do, but it's kind of getting a little late. This computer is really slow. So maybe we could, I'll just give you an update on what's going on. And there's two, in my other life, when I'm not trying to keep the system together, about 50% of my time is spent on the Lightmare landfill, and we're currently in the final phases of master planning the site for development. There's about 30 acres of light industrial out there. Some of you have been there. Have you been there yet? And I don't think you've been there yet either. This process has been going on for about 4 years. There was a break in there when we moved over here, and I had some health issues last year. We had to go back to community development and development engineering and resolve some issues with the design of the road, which they refer to as a road modification in the code. And that has finally gotten resolved. And the application was deemed fully complete, but it was put on hold while we went back to development engineering and got the road modification fixed. And that has now been approved. We're back on the clock. And so down to the final 78 days of this project. We're literally looking at 4 years, either May or June. And there's two paths that this can kind of go by. One is we have a public notice that goes out here in a couple weeks. And that'll be out for 15 days. If no one from the public responds and doesn't want a public hearing or has major issues, and I'm hoping that's the case because we've done multiple public meetings out there,
The neighbors are we're okay with it. They understand the development's coming, and it is what it is. We still may see someone ask for that, and that would trigger a hearing before the hearings examiner. And that's the difference between that end of April, first part of May, fully approved date, and or the end of May. But one way or the other, we're done in June. Then the next phases will be actually preparing to surplus the property, which will take about another 6 months. And that involves an appraisal. And then after you receive the appraisal, you go to the board and ask, are you willing to surplus this property? And we expect that they will do that because it's worth an awful lot of money. It's one of the few light industrial properties that are flat near ingress and egress. You know, it's just off I-205 on Patton. So it's a really decent piece of property, and I expect it to go pretty quickly. We've had some interest in it already, but you know, we're roughly about a year from now, and the property, I can't speculate how much it is, but I know that we were probably in the $4 million range, and all of that money is required to go back into the landfill fund and protect the ratepayers over the next coming 20 years or whatever gas production that we have out there. So this is a pretty good deal for the county. Some of that money can also be used to master plan the next phases of the property, which, you know, I don't want to speculate too much on this, but we've talked about solar, recreation, and so there's other uses for the landfill itself. This is, like I said, a piece of adjacent property that's clean light industrial property. So that, it was really big news that when we finally got through community development and development engineering. And so it's good to see that back on track. And like I say, we're in the final phases of the approval process. And since we have some new members, when we convene in March, I'll bring in some of the kind of renderings of what we've done to get a little better idea of what it looks like.
What's the address?
9411 Northeast 94th Avenue. It will come up as Waste Connections. It's literally the site surrounds Waste Connections.
Yeah.
So it's the closest cross.
42nd?
They can do this in 94th Avenue. Yeah. The closest cross street is 90th. So it's just south of Waste Connections and just east of 94th.
So that begs a quick question, is that we do have a few new staff to the health department, and we are going to be doing some solid waste immersion with them, that they will be interacting with us. This may be an opportunity, as we're also ingraining these people and taking them out to our facilities, that we can open that up to SWAC members who haven't been to some of the more local transfer stations or closed landfills or whatever. So I'll make sure to work with Kim on communicating when we're going to be out there with some of our other new staff, and probably Mike and Kim and myself, and just get a chance to kind of show you grass.
I'll do my tour guide thing.
Grass covering, yeah, a bunch of garbage covered in grass. But if that's an opportunity, we can make that available to SWAC members in the next couple, probably in the next month or so. We'll be doing quite a few tours of county facilities for staff. So.
Yeah, and so the other piece, and what we were going to provide for you today, but we're kind of lean on time, is a presentation that I'm also on the 99th Street Extension team. 99th Street is going to be extended in roughly 2020 or 21 from 117th 503 across the landfill, northern end of the landfill, over to 94th Avenue. And it's quite the engineering feat, because they have to go through the main stormwater pond to do this. And we just got buy off from Toxics and the Stormwater Group at Ecology for this design. And it will eliminate a large portion of the pumping that goes on out there, because the pond's in a hole. And then we currently pump up to a force main, which then daylights at the Curtain Creek. And that would not be allowed today under current stormwater standards. And what's being proposed is a large infiltration gallery.
so close, fairly close to 94th, where it will not impact the landfill. And Public Works did a really good job of putting it together, and it's a very interesting presentation, but it's 15 minutes if that's going quick. So we'll come back. We've got time next one or the following one. We'll go over that one. So I think that's it for that issue for tonight.
Cool. Thanks. I wanted to highlight one last thing real quick. I skipped over something as far as a solid waste program update. The Repair Cafe, which is a series of events that are focused on people bringing materials or things that are broken, from electronics to teddy bears to whatever, to a place where people help repair them or teach them how to repair things, is now being completely operated, managed by the Columbia Springs Environmental Education Center.
Yep.
And there's actually one happening right now. So we're providing support, but the management of the Repair Cafe is completely transitioned over to one of our nonprofit partners. So.
And then very quickly, these were out on the desk. And so it's a Wastebusters challenge. The idea is you can, as an individual or as a group, maybe at your workplace, do this challenge. And there's three challenges. You can either fight litter, you can replace plastic in your daily life, or you can promise to not waste any edible food. It's a great challenge. Get your friends kind of excited about it, and there are prizes for those that get the most points. So that's going on March 10th through 30th, but you sign up right now. And then also just quickly, the Regional Solid Waste System Steering Committee group just recently met. I know that you guys like to be informed about when that happens. We covered a number of the same topics that were covered today. In addition, we also talked about the city cleanup events, or formerly known as the Recycling Day events. So the Recycling Day events have retired, essentially. And so any cities that put on their own cleanup events, the county will help with recycling efforts. So right now that is just the city of Ridgefield and the town of Yakult. So if anybody asks you about it. And then additionally, they also voted to approve the yard debris, kind of changing some of the language in those contracts, because right now it was very prohibitive against any vegetative waste being in there. So imagine cleaning up your garden and you can't put your pumpkin in there. So kind of making that list a little bit more flexible to include also vegetative material that originates from your garden, but still not your kitchen, because that is considered a different type of waste. But that's an update for that group. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Looks like the last thing on the agenda is public comment. Have anything in general for the good of the order?
National CSA Day is February 24th. If you want to be a conscious consumer, buy local farm products. One of the best ways to get community-supported agriculture shared from your local farmer. You can go on the ClarkCountyGrown.org website and find a listing of all of our Clark County farms that have CSAs.
The 23rd.
23rd. All right. And that's just the day that we're getting people up to really push to buy your CSA that day. Give the farmer a chunk of money at the beginning of the year, and then every week you get a box of farm products from them.
Anything from any other SWAC members? Including Steve.
I know it's late. Were you getting ready to say something, Steve?
Say again?
Were you going to say
something? No, I was just asking you because I was not a SWAC member. He had anything for us.
Yes. All right. Well, I one thing I forgot to mention earlier, too, was that, I don't know if you paid attention, but, you know, the Clark Conservation District, which historically has been funded through state and other grants, has, like so many others, has seen a steep decline in those resources to support their core funding, their work. So they went to the board back in December requesting a fee that would be based on land size and some other factors, and the board didn't approve it at that time and has turned it over to a committee that includes several departments run through the county manager to evaluate them, and that process is ongoing right now, but basically to evaluate kind of a couple things. What services do they provide? Are they or aren't they duplicative of services that the county already provides? And where do they fit and where they can provide, continue to work but not overlap? And then also looking at their financials and their financial, you know, the proposal and how they might adjust that. I don't know where that will end up, but I think if you're concerned about the conservation districts and its future, it's something to keep your eye on with the board right now. But right now they've asked the several departments to sit in, and I'm right now sitting in for public health, and we'll pull in parts of the of our folks that do work and interface with them to help with our analysis. But basically that's going on right now also. And I thought that might be important for folks here to be aware of. So if you have any questions about that, if you could just send me.
Sure. Anything else before we adjourn? All right, I guess we will look from Kim and Mr. Travis on whether or not we have a March meeting and potentially dates and times. So be on the lookout for that. And with that, we will adjourn the meeting.